Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey friends, I'm Sharon McMahon, host of Here's Where It Gets Interesting. Each week, I speak with authors, experts, and thought leaders on everything from American history and democracy to how to be a better person on the internet. And don't miss my extremely popular docuseries, which educate you on things you never learned in history class. Follow and listen to Here's Where It Gets Interesting on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
But Friday and through the weekend, highs are going to be near 60 degrees with lows in the 40s. So it'll be kind of fall-like, and we'll appreciate that, I guess. Colin Grabo joins us now, Associate Director of the Herbert A. Stifel Center for Trade Policy Studies. Talk about tariffs. How you doing, Professor?
Good morning, Tommy.
I'm sorry. I called you Professor. I didn't mean that sarcastically. I presumed you were. Are you?
I am not. No. Okay. You can just, Associate Director at the Cato Center for Trade Policy Studies, that'll work.
So let's talk about tariffs, because look, whenever you talk tariffs, people automatically jump to the political corners of Bidenist, Trump that. My own standpoint here is, first of all, I don't know if anybody knows what's going to happen. It'll be my first question to you. Do we know what's going to happen? And secondly, so long as it doesn't hurt the country or hurt the consumer, I'm all for it. So take me through, Colin, if you will, tariffs 101 and what's been done, what might be done, and et cetera.
Yeah, so let's start with, like I said, tariffs 101. So tariffs are a tax on imports. That's what they are. They're a tax on imported goods. So when those goods arrive in the country, you pay a tax on it. So if we have, 5% tax on a $100 item, you're paying $105 for that item. You can kind of think of it like a sales tax, something like that. And that means that anything coming into the country is going to cost more than would otherwise be the case if these tariffs are implemented. So we're talking right now in the context of possible tariffs on items from Mexico and Canada. So you want to build a house, that lumber you're going to use from Canada, well, that's going to cost more. The fruits and vegetables you're going to buy from Mexico, that's going to cost more. And a lot of people, I suspect, think of tariffs in terms of, items on the store shelves, that those cost. But let's also remember that roughly half of all imports into this country are not consumer goods. They're inputs. They're used by businesses here in the United States to make things. A great example of this is the auto industry. There's a lot of tight linkages between auto companies in Canada, the United States, and Mexico. So take auto parts. Auto parts may cross the border between the U.S. and Mexico 7 or 8 times before they're actually installed in a vehicle. So this means businesses will have to pay higher costs for the things that they use to make things. So obviously consumers get hit, businesses get hit. That means they're less competitive. And then, of course, we all worry about Canada, Mexico, trading partners. They're not going to take this standing down, right? They're going to say, well, you're going to do that to us. We're going to do something back to you. And there's going to be retaliation. And obviously that's going to hurt American businesses as well. So from a lot of different perspectives, these are quite harmful.
So how likely is any of this to happen? Or is this, because, if President Trump always talks about, what was his book, The Art of the Deal and being a good negotiator and all of that stuff. I don't know whether he is or not, but could this be part of a negotiating ploy with an end game of what?
Yeah, I think that's an excellent question. I think it's interesting to note that in the days since the announcement of these tariffs to be imposed on day one, supposedly, of the new Trump administration, the markets have basically shrugged this off. There's been no dramatic fall in the stock market. In fact, I think it's actually gone up. Mm-hmm. This suggests to me that people are skeptical that Trump will follow through. As you noted, Trump, he's all about the art of the deal. And the fact that he's announcing this 2 months ahead of when he takes office, to me suggests there's a high likelihood that this is a negotiating tactic. I'm setting out an extreme, this is my opening bid, so to speak, setting out an extreme position, and we'll negotiate, and where we'll actually wind up could very well be a much different place. It's worth keeping in mind that, of course, we had a first Trump administration, so we have a track record to look back on. And Trump, you know, he did things like he threatened to pull out of NAFTA, saying it was a terrible trade agreement. And in fact, what happened is we renegotiated it, made some, you know, basically tweaks, wasn't massively overhauled. And then he said he was good with it. So there's a history of Trump, you know, making statements, but then where we actually end up is perhaps in a different place.
So let's look back at his first administration and talk about his history on trade and tariffs. From your standpoint, Colin, how do you do? Because I don't know.
Yeah, so I don't think it's a great record. If we look back, what he did early on, some of the first tariffs he imposed were tariffs on imports of steel and aluminum from a range of countries. And if, we've had some government reports. We have time, you know, to study these and what was the impact. And if you look at those tariffs in particular, well, on the one hand, that's good for the steel and aluminum industries, right? That means less competition. That means that prices go up so they can expand production. That's good for them. But there's a whole lot of industries out there that use steel and aluminum to make things. You know, obviously the construction industry. Cars, auto manufacturers, a whole range of folks, you know, people who make machinery. And government studies show that, yeah, these tariffs benefited steel and aluminum producers by, I think, something like $2.5 billion. But then the industries that use steel and aluminum were hurt on the order of, you know, $3.3 billion, I think, for a net loss there. And that's kind of the story of just tariffs writ large. So that, you know, there were, of course, also tariffs imposed on goods from China. China retaliated. U.S. Agricultural, our farmers were hurt because China bought less stuff from the U.S. in retaliation. So the track record is not great, but you could also say that the amount of tariffs were not as drastic as perhaps what Trump initially indicated. So I think that's kind of my read on the first Trump administration.
So somebody texted in, and look, I want to encourage the audience to text in here because I'm sure you, Colin, know more, have forgotten more than any of us will ever know about tariffs. Somebody texted in and said, what is the guest talking about? These countries already put tariffs on all goods going to those locations. That includes Europe, China, and South America. Somebody else texted in and said, are there tariffs on U.S. goods? We'll talk about all that when we come back with Colin Grabo, Associate Director of the Herbert A. Stifel Center for Trade Policy Studies at the Cato Institute. That's accurate? Colin, I got that right?
Yes. Okay, thank good. You. Thank you.
You bet. 721 traffic now, WWL. Hi, 725, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking with Colin Grabo, Associate Director of the Herbert A. Stifel Center for Trade Policy Studies at the Cato Institute, about former President Trump's, President Trump's tariffs and some of the things that he's announced. Text comes in and says, countries already put tariffs on goods going to those locations, including Europe, China, and South America, and are there tariffs on U.S. goods? Thoughts, Colin?
Yeah, so if I understand the listener correctly, they're saying that, hey, basically, we already have to, you know, other countries impose tariffs on us, and we do the same to them. You know, in the context of Canada and Mexico, it's worth remembering that we signed a free trade agreement with both countries back in 1994, or took effect in 1994, NAFTA, which then was renegotiated by President Trump, now called the USMCA, which ensures that the vast majority of goods going back and forth between the U.S. and Canada are tariff-free. That's the whole point of the agreement. And this gives, of course, lower costs to consumers, but also provides certainty to businesses that they can trade back and forth with companies in those countries, integrate their supply chains, and know that there won't be tariffs on those goods. Well, that, of course, has been upended now. We don't have that certainty anymore. And yes, you know, if you want to look more broadly, of course, other countries do impose tariffs on U.S. goods. But President Trump, you know, he didn't link this latest threat to other countries' trade practices. You know, he didn't say, hey, we're going to raise our tariffs on their goods because they're, you know, they have tariffs on our goods and that, you know, we'll do some tit for tat reduction. You know, he linked this to migration and I believe fentanyl. So it's not, he didn't even raise, you know, threaten this in the context of other countries' trade actions. And then just lastly, I'll say, you know, whatever other countries are doing, if they're making, from my perspective, mistakes by putting tariffs on U.S. goods, to me, it doesn't, you know, just because they have bad policy, I don't think it's worth emulating that and then, you know, adopting that and kind of mirroring those practices.
You know, every action has a reaction. A friend of mine sent me some stories here, one from Bloomberg. China's snapping up cheap Brazilian soybeans as Trump returns. Another one from Reuters says, China trade war threatens U.S. corn, soybean exports as South America stands to gain. So basically, China, as I understand it, is investing major money in developing South American farmland and doing some things to, I guess, eliminate the need for American exports or lessen their dependence on American exports. And if that's the case, then what does that do to our soybean industry?
Yeah, that's right. So as I mentioned before, our farmers, our agriculture sector, they were some of the hardest hit by the tariff war, the trade war we engaged in with China under the first Trump administration. China, you know, big purchases of U.S. soybeans and other crops. And when you know, they imposed tariffs on U.S. soybeans, China responded by shifting purchases to Brazil and other large producers. So I think we can absolutely expect, you know, more of the same, going forward. If the U.S. imposes tariffs on, say, Mexican avocados, you can see, you know, there'll be a shift to Peruvian Mexicados, but, you know, at a higher cost. And, of course, Canada and Mexico, they have promised, or Mexico's president has promised to retaliate against the U.S. Canada did retaliate 4 or 5 years ago when the U.S. imposed steel and aluminum tariffs on them. I expect they'll do the same again. And that will mean that people will look for alternative sources instead of buying various products from the U.S., but look to alternative suppliers.
Every action has a reaction. As I said earlier, this is going to manifest itself for the prices of consumers. And they got the midterms coming up. So one way or the other, that's how it's going to be judged, I would imagine, politically. I don't mean to get you into a realm that you don't want to go, but that seems to be the real world.
Well, it is worth, you talk about politics, it is worth interest. It's worth pointing out that, of course, we just had an election where it seems that one of the motivating issues for a lot of voters was high costs, high prices, inflation. And it's curious then that, you know, Trump would immediately or threaten on day one to impose tariffs, which will further raise prices. So from a political standpoint, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And again, it just makes you wonder if this is a negotiated tactic or we'll end up in a different place.
We'll see. Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time. Have a nice Thanksgiving. We come back, we'll talk about homelessness in the city right now. Time for WWL First News. We've been talking about turkey and dressing and Thanksgiving and all of that stuff. And if you want a little preview and you want to do some good, and you want to help out and maybe even get your Thanksgiving dinner a little bit early, all on one delicious piece of bread, you can do it over at Parkway. And with that, we're joined by Justin Kennedy, the manager over at Parkway Bakery and Tavern. How you doing, Justin?
I'm doing all right, Tommy. How the heck are you, man?
I'm okay, man. Thanks for coming on again. I wanted to give you one more shot at this because it's a weird kind of deal the way it's working out with Thanksgiving not being where it normally is. Seems like it's a longer period. Anyway, tell me about what's going on today at Parkway, and I did it for the Turkey 2024.
Sure. So we've done it every Wednesday past and every Wednesday in November. We have four Wednesdays. Today's the last Wednesday in November, and we do a sandwich. It's everything you're going to get tomorrow, right? It's your roasted turkey. It's homemade stuffing. It's homemade gravy, cranberry sauce, all on French bread. And, it's gotten so popular over the years, we harnessed it for a fundraiser with the Al Copeland Foundation to fight cancer. And we're doing just that, man. And I know I was on the phone with you a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. We're looking to hone in. We're about $32,000. We're looking to hone in about $40,000 raised. with this fundraiser.
That's awesome, man.
Which is absolutely blows it out the park from what we've done in the past.
So tell me, if you skip the line, you go to Parkway.
So you go to Parkway Bakery. We're right here in Mid-City, 538 Hagen Avenue. You know, I've said in the past you can call in, but I don't know if that's going to happen today. I'm probably about to get, when I get off with you, I'm probably about to turn the phones off because we have so many orders and the line's going to be down the street.
What about the register, like, you know, thing? Skip the line. Can you still do that?
Yeah, exactly. You can get on to get here. There's going to be a line. Come in. If you want to skip the line, you can donate to the Al Copeland Foundation. You did it yourself, Tommy. Yeah. You get a T-shirt. You get a drink. You get sweet potato fries. You get the sandwich. You get to skip the line.
Ice cream sandwich.
You get an ice cream sandwich from New Orleans Ice Cream. And you get to say you donated all that money to cancer because that's where it's going.
It's a good-looking T-shirt. So you go to Parkway Poor Boy. Tell me how to go on. Can you still do this online, Justin?
We don't have it online. You can call in 504-482-3047. The line's open at about 8:30. But like I said, I expect to shut the lines down soon because we got to take care of people who are waiting in that line.
Right. So if somebody wants to skip the line, can they still do it, I guess, is what I'm asking, and donate?
Oh, yeah. We have a booth here. You don't even have to worry about going online anywhere to try to buy a ticket. Just, we have a booth here. Walk past the line. Walk into the outside patio. You'll see a Al Copeland Foundation booth. You can pay that ticket right there, and they'll bring your food and right to you right there.
You got people lined up already or not?
Yeah, we got a couple.
No kidding, that's crazy.
We got a couple, man, and you know, this is going to be the best day yet.
Tell me real quick about the Al Copeland Foundation. What they do?
Al Copeland Foundation was started by Al Jr. in 2008 in lieu of his father passing of this cancer that there was no cure for. And since then, they've worked with LSU and helped develop a drug that is saving lives from this cancer, Merkel cell carcinoma, that there was no cure for. So Al Copeland Foundation is the best secret in town when it comes to cancer treatment. Right now, they're working on, like helping people out in rural areas who can't get connected to a hospital, you know, via online doctors and nurses. So it's very special. It's very dear to our hearts. And Al, look, he puts 100% of that money that's raised back into the foundation. There's nobody on the payroll. That's what I love about it.
Thank you, Justin. I appreciate your time and your efforts. You know that. Go to Parkway today. Bring your checkbook. Bring your cash. Can you make a plastic donation? Do it that way?
You can make any kind of donation. Tommy, whatever you got, man. If you bring a goat, I'll trade a goat for you.
Okay. I know the patio is pet friendly. I've seen dogs. I've never seen a goat out there. Hey, thank you, Justin. Have a nice Thanksgiving, all right?
All right, you too.
And it's a good-looking T-shirt, y'all. I'll tell you that. It really is. 743, 17 till 8. We'll talk about homelessness in the city when we come back on WWL. 7:48, 12 till 8, Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by Martha Kegel, Executive Director of Unity of Greater New Orleans, about what's going on with the homeless encampment sweeps. Good morning, Martha. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you, Tommy?
I'm okay. I will say this. I think in terms of, this is just my opinion. You don't have to get involved in this, Martha. We'll tell you what. Go ahead. Let me have you on, and I'll give my opinion, which concerns, if we're going to get worried, if the governor's office could be worried about what's going on in the city, I would be more concerned with the Plaza Tower falling apart than I would with the homeless encampments. But that's just me. Tell me what's going on with the homeless sweeps, and where are we?
Well, as I understand it, there's a temporary restraining order in place right at the moment. We haven't been involved with that, but that's my understanding. I think that's just temporary, though, to make sure that the city laws are followed in terms of giving people proper notice so that they don't lose their possessions. But I will say that, you know, I think moving people from place to place doesn't solve homelessness. And the unfortunate thing about that having been done is that the Unity Collaborative of organizations in the city and the state had been working really hard together harmoniously to house people. And we had a active list, and we had done a lot of work with more than 75 individuals and had gotten them approved for different housing programs, which is a complex process. And we're in the process of housing them when all of a sudden they were moved. And so that undid a lot of our work. And then people ended up getting scattered, and now we can't find them. And they're now in other neighborhoods, and, you know, their presence is probably causing some problems for other neighbors and other businesses elsewhere. So nothing was accomplished by that, and I would hope that going forward we can all continue to work harmoniously, because what we know is that the solutions to homelessness are proven, and it's housing, rental assistance, and case management services. And we're, you know, we have a lot of expertise in doing that. We don't have quite enough resources, considering how large our poverty population is, but we have more resources than we've ever had right now. And if we all just work together, we can make a huge difference.
Let me say it a different way, Martha, and maybe I shouldn't have started the way I did. Let me say it this way. You don't want people to stay on the streets. You're not advocating for people to live in homeless encampments. There is a plan in place. There is a process underway. People have been enrolled in the process. Things are moving. The wheels are in motion. This just disrupts everything and makes it harder to get people off of the street. Although maybe politically expedient, although maybe, you know, by moving a block or two down the street, it might make it look a little bit better in the short term for some people, it is extremely disruptive to the process that you have in place. Is that accurate?
That is absolutely accurate. And in addition to that, a lot of the folks we're talking about do suffer from serious mental illness, and they suffer from paranoia. And if you, you know, have police officers involved, you know, forcing people to move, you have just disrupted the trust that you've built with that person, and you may never get the opportunity to voluntarily house them again. They may, you know, just completely distrust you from, you know, now going forward. And so, you know, the trauma that caused is also an important issue. The lack of, you know, the disrupted trust is a very important issue. It doesn't really matter what our various motivations are for wanting to end people's homelessness. We can have multiple motivations. It's bad for economic development. It's bad for the quality of life for every citizen. It is a tragedy for the people actually suffering from homelessness. As long as we work together and use the proven, cost-effective, compassionate solutions, we can make a huge difference, and we are making a huge difference. In the last 13 months alone, we have housed 1,292 people experiencing literal homelessness.
Martha, I don't know if you were out there or not, but everything I've seen and I've heard from people that were, they tell me that the police officers, the state police, were extremely compassionate. They got the sense that they didn't really want to be out there, but they were just doing what they were told to do because they realized that they were disrupting a process. Did you want to weigh in on that at all?
I would agree with that. I think that the state police tried their very best to try to minimize the disruption, and they tried to be as compassionate as possible, and kudos for them for trying to, you know, make a bad situation not as bad as it could have been.
Final thoughts if somebody wants to get involved or help Unity or help with a homeless situation, because, you know, table pounding accomplishes nothing. I always use the example, Martha, of a community event, a parent-teacher meeting. Chairs just don't set themselves up. Somebody has to do the work behind the scenes. And when it comes to this, again, table pounding, grandstanding accomplishes nothing. If somebody wants to get involved, what do they do?
The best thing to do is to go to our website, unitygno.org, unitygno.org. You can either give directly to Unity, or you can give to any of our member organizations, which we have listed. You can give to Catholic Charities. You can give to Volunteers of America, Harry Thompson Center, Travelers Aid Society, Easter Seals. Many organizations are part of the work that we do. At any given time, we are housing 3,500 people with disabilities previously rescued from homelessness. And as I said, we just housed another almost 1,300 people, and we are hoping to house 500 more people this winter, and we can do that with the community's help. Another thing people can do is donate gently used household goods to our warehouse. Again, if you go to our website, you can see how to do that, unitygno.org.
Thank you, Martha. Happy Thanksgiving to you. God bless all the work you do. 7:55, 5 till 8, traffic now, WWL.